Oh, coming right in the middle. So we're going to do Chagiga. Probably the most famous Gemara from Chagiga is the Gemara we're going to do, which is Yudalad Amid Beis, which goes until about Tesvav Amid Beis, Teszayin, which is the Gemaras of Arba'ah Nichnasu L'Pardes. That was the mistake. The title that I sent out was Arba Nichnasu L'Pardes, and as I was printing it out in the shul, I realized, wait a second, isn't it Arba'ah Nichnasu L'Pardes? So I looked it up in the Gemara, and in fact, the Talmud Bavli knows how to speak Hebrew properly, and they wrote Arba'ah, so I wrote in on the top of your sheets, in the name of the sugya, Arba'ah Nichnasu L'Pardes, I added a little hey. But even Pinchas didn't catch it, and I emailed him, so there you go.
So excited to be coming.
Exactly. Okay, so the Gemara, this is, as I said, the Gemara in Chagiga has a lot of Agadata. That's, you know, I would say, I don't know, I haven't done a study, but it's about 40% Agadata, the whole Masechta. And in the second parak, that's where a lot of it is, because the second parak begins with an Ein Dorshin, which talks about all the things that you're not supposed to talk about. All the things that you're not supposed to learn in small groups. Maisim Rakava, issues of Arayos, issues of of stealing you're not supposed to learn about in small groups because people won't pay attention properly. So in that context of Maisim Rakava, of mystical topics, so eventually we get to our Gemara, which says Tanu Rabbanan, right? We're about seven lines up from the bottom of Yud Daled Amud Beis. I printed out from the shul printer, so you'll be able to see the daf number at the top. About seven lines up from the bottom, four words in, Tan Rabbanan Arba'ah Nichnasu B'Pardes. Four people entered the Pardes. So what's the Pardes? So in English we would translate Pardes, I guess, as paradise, or really, I guess, into the orchard, right? But I assume Pardes has something to do I assume paradise has something to do with the word Pardes, but I don't know. In Machshava, Pardes is usually used as an acronym for four different ways of interpreting the Torah, right? You know what those are.
Shat,
Remez, Drash, and Sod, right? Each one given a different value. So these four entered the Pardes. It does not seem that the Pardes mentioned over here has anything to do with the acronym that we all know and love, of Shat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. It doesn't seem that that's what it's talking about. Of course, anything can be explained that way, but it doesn't seem that this is what it's talking about. It is vague what it is talking about. Maybe we can come to our own conclusions. Ve'iluhen, here are the four people that went into Pardes. Ben Azai, Ben Zoma, Acher, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, so we'll go one by one. Ben Azai is Shimon Ben Azai, and Ben Zoma is Shimon Ben Zoma. It's just a coincidence. As far as I know, that their names are both Shimon. It's not a coincidence that they're called Ben Azai and Ben Zoma as opposed to Rabbi Shimon Ben Azai or Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma. That's pretty consistent. Almost always they're called Ben Azai and Ben Zoma. The Gemara has a discussion about whether or not they had smicha. Sometimes they are called Rabbi Shimon Ben Azai and Rabbi Shimon Ben Zoma. I want to say that they got smicha at some point after the story. The problem is what happened to Ben Azai makes that quite impossible. So as we're going to see, the third person mentioned here is Acher, who is, of course, Elisha ben Avuya, who is called Elisha ben Avuya and is cited, the only place where he's really cited, aside from our Gemara over here, the only place where he's really cited by name as teaching us something is where?
Who?
Everywhere else in Shas is going to be called Acher. No, Acher. Elisha ben Avuya is usually called Acher, and we'll see why. The only other place in Shas that I know of where he's explicitly quoted by name as teaching us something. Oh, is that not?
Oh, it's the sugya about.
Oh, this is one side. Sorry,
you
sorry.
Got it back in.
We'll do it together.
The sugya when he became an apikoros.
This is well, that's kind of okay in
where
Chulin.
He sees the...
Yeah, but that's he's not giving us a teaching over there. I'm saying he's actually cited by name teaching us something.
Pirkei Avos.
He's cited in Pirkei Avos as teaching us something. It's interesting, right after him is quoted Rabbi Yaakov, who, according to legend, is his grandson, Rabbi Yaakov. So that's where he's cited elsewhere. There is a Tosfos, not here, that says, I don't think we're going to be learning about it, but his most famous Talmud, or at least the Tana who we see had a good relationship with, we'll see it on the next Talmud, was Rabbi Meir, right? And there's a Tosfos who says that whenever you see... I think Rabbi Meir quoting Acherim, there's a Tosfos that suggests that that's Elisha ben Avuya. Now it's difficult because based on the Gemara in Horios, It may be that we know who it's quoting, and it's actually a mayor himself, sometimes referred to as Achirim, based on the Gemara Nahorios, which is a whole story at the end of the Gemara about something a little shady that Rebbe Meir did himself. But either way, Tosfos actually suggests this very interesting theory that Rebbe Meir quotes Elisha ben Avuya, and they call him Achirim because he's Acher. We're going to find out where he got that name soon. Okay, so Vayter, the Gemara says these four went into Paradise. Amar lem Rabbi Kiva, before they went in. Now it makes it sound like they all went in together, right? Like it's almost like a place where they go, or you know, maybe some form of study, but that they're going in together, because Rabbi Kiva is telling them, he's giving them advice. Amar Rabbi Kiva, kshatem magin etzel avnei shayish tahor al tomru mayim mayim mishum shenamar dover shkarim lo yichaven lo yichon leneged einai. When you get to the place in Pardes, which is looks like perfectly pure marble, okay, avnei shayish tahor, meaning it's like it's translucent marble, it will look like water. Don't get confused, and don't say mayim mayim. I don't know what this means. This is very esoteric. He's saying you're looking at this; it looks like water. Don't say that. And he quotes a pasuk. Where's the pasuk from? The Torah tells us it's from Tehillim. Lo yeshev bekerav beiti oser miyad dover shkarim lo yikon leneged einai. Because it would be false to describe this clear marble as water. We will see that there is going to be somewhat of a relationship with water and this whole story in a few minutes. And maybe it will inform us about what's going on with this Mayim Mayim. We'll see in a comment that Ben Azai makes later on that may shed light on this. Although the truth is actually, I said before, it sounds like they went in together. It could be alternatively that maybe Rabbi Kiva went in and then everybody else went in afterwards, because it sounds like Rabbi Kiva is trying to give them advice about how to navigate, right? Almost like Rabbi Kiva has been there and he wants to teach them to be careful. But either way, there was a book called As a Driven Leaf. Has anybody ever read it?
Yeah.
A lot of people read it? Okay, so As a Driven Leaf was written by Milton Steinberg, who was a rabbi in JTS in the conservative movement. Actually, in my version, there's a preface by Chaim Potok, who's a famous author who also went to JTS. And also, I found out a few years ago, I know who his nephew is actually a Rosh Yeshiva NYU named Rabbi Tzvi Sabalevsky. Pretty well-known. Rabbi Sabalevsky is one of the big Rosh Yeshiva NYU. His mother's brother was Chaim Potok, which is an interesting thing. So anyways, he was studying to be a rabbi in YU. He went to YU, and then he ended up in JTS. That's Chaim Potok. And as he writes in the preface that Milton Steinberg, when he was writing it, he felt that he was writing about himself. It's a fascinating book. And it's a take on this Pardes, and it suggests that what they were studying was philosophy, metaphysics. And basically phenomenology, how you can know things. And that's what led Elisha ben Avuya astray. One theory, it's one way of reading all of the stories of Elisha ben Avuya. The book is trying to draw together all of the stories and try to create a coherent picture out of it. Either way, they go into Pardes, and Rabbi Kiva gives them this advice. So what happens to each one? So Ben Azai hits it v'met. Right, so this is why I said before, it would be hard to say that Ben Azai got smicha after this because he doesn't survive the experience. Hitzitz umet. He looked, apparently he looked at something he shouldn't have looked at, and he immediately, or maybe I shouldn't say that, he looked at something and it caused him to die. Alav ha-katuv omer yakar b'hinei Hashem ha-mafta l'chasidav. Which is a pasuk in Tehillim, which we know from Hallel, right? Which is this probably one of the strangest pasukim in Hallel, right? I mean, Yakar b'nei Hashem hamavta l'chasidav. You know, precious in God's eyes those who die. What does that mean? I always felt actually that it refers to two characters in Tanakh, in Chumash, Vayikra, Parshas.
Nadav Nabiyo.
I felt obviously it's got to be Nadav Nabiyo, right? B'korvaya Kadesh. That seems clear to me. But okay, it sounds like yes. It sounds like anybody who comes too close to God. So then they're the ones who pass away, but he doesn't hold it against them, and as though almost like simply this is a result of it happening. Benzoma hits its vinifka. Benzoma, it sounds like he did the same thing. Hits its, he looked, and he became, well, he went crazy. It implies that something went wrong in his head. That he had too much dvash, too much honey, and it made him sick, and he's going to throw it up.
It's also another mavir.
That he got too close.
They got too close.
Right, they didn't die.
They tried to get on a spiritual high, like more than that was their goal.
Right, but they didn't die. Sorry, they died. They didn't go crazy. Ben Zoma survived the experience. Something happened to him. Okay, Acher kitzetz benetios. What does that mean? Acher ended up cutting at the branches, right? Cutting at the seeds, really. What's this talking about? So, I mean, this doesn't necessarily help, but there is one other person you find in Chazal that is described as kitzetz benetios, which is Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon is described also as being kitzetz benetios. It's a general term ascribed to people who come to heresy, come to kfira, who have an experience that, you know, they used to believe in God and then they stop. So Acher is going to stop believing in God. There may be some comparison to Adam HaRishon's experience to Elisha ben Avuya's experience that we're going to see later on. But either way, what it means is that he saw something that basically led him astray off the derech. Rabbi Akiva yatza b'shalom. Rabbi Akiva was fine. Rabbi Akiva ended up being fine. Okay. Shaul is Ben Zoma. So Ben Zoma is the one who went crazy. Mahu l'sirusi kalba. Now, it's interesting. It's not clear where these questions are coming from. Rashi says, Shaul ed Ben Zoma. Actually, no. Rashi doesn't comment on what I'm mentioning. When did they ask him this question? Who asked him this question? It's not clear. Did they ask him this after he left the paradise? Some of Harshim say that he was asked this in Shamayim somehow. Or is this just a general question? And that would center on what these questions actually have to do with this sugya. It's not exactly clear at the outset. Here, the question is it okay to neuter a dog? That's the question that he was asked. Ben Zoma was asked, is it okay to neuter a dog? Mahalu siruse kalba. And he answers, Amalem uba'artzechem lo ta'asu. Kol sheba'artzechem lo ta'asu. What does that mean? So we have to look up the pasuk. Where's the pasuk from? You have to jump to the bottom, right? The Torah Orah Shalem, you have it at the bottom, right? Same as me.
In the middle.
Or do you have it in the middle? The okay, you have it on the side. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Torah HaShalim, it's a pasuk in Vayikra, Uma'uch v'kasus nasuk v'karus lo sakarivu la'ashem u'baritzachem lo tasu. This refers to the idea that you cannot neuter a korban, an offering. So what does that have to do with the dog? So this is actually the question. We know you can't neuter an animal that is fit to be a korban, but is a dog fit to be a korban?
No.
Sorry, a dog is not fit.
You can't neuter an animal that's fit to be a korban. You can't neuter an animal before it becomes a korban.
I believe either one.
Why would you want to? You can't neuter any animal.
Well, that's what the question here is. The Torah only says that you're not supposed to. In the context of the Torah here, where it says you're not supposed to neuter anything, is the context of animals that are fit to be korbanos. Question is, what about a dog? Is a dog fit to be a korban?
No.
No, not only is it not fit to be a korban,
you
can't even sell it to buy a korban. Huh? Yeah. If you sell an animal, if you sell a dog, you can't buy a korban with that money. That's how far away it is, which is what they're asking Ben Zoma. Not only, you know, this is as far away as you get from being a korban, because you can't even sell it to buy a korban. And Ben Zoma nevertheless says, based on this pasuk, that you're not allowed to. Now, why? Because he says, kol sheba'artzechem lo ta'asu. Now, what does that usually mean? Kol shebaritzchem lo ta'asu. It usually means something that's usher in Eretz Yisrael, right? Mm-hmm. So he's basically saying that you're not allowed to do it at all based on this pasuk. Where does he get this from? What is that? What's the connection then? So Ben Zoma suggests that all the things that you're not allowed to do, including this, right? He interprets the pasuk differently. Usually it means that when it says kol shabar tzachem lo tasu, it means in Eretz Yisrael specifically it's aser, which means that in Chutz La'aretz it would be mutter. So he says, no, that's not what it means here. He says that what it means is to any animal in your land, right? Here it doesn't mean anything that's aser in your land. Here it means anything in your land will be aser, which means that even a dog, anything will not be mutter. What?
Wherever you are, or your land,
it would seem wherever you are. The halacha is anyways. The halacha is that you're not allowed to be misarius anything anywhere. That's the halacha. The question is, we have to wonder, what does this have to do with the whole story? But okay, we have another question coming up. Shalas Benzoma, again, Besula Sheibra Mahu, a virgin who becomes pregnant. What's the halacha? Mahu the Kohen Gadol? Can she marry a Kohen Gadol? What's the question? Michai Shinan de Shmuel, the Amr Shmuel, Yachal Ani Livol Kama Beilos Vlodam, Odilma de Shmuel Lo Shchicha. Question is this, and by the way, you'll be surprised how often this comes up. Shmuel, now this is anachronistic, by the way. Let's go step by step. Shmuel makes a statement that he knows of a way. I don't know if this means he could do it or if it means that he knows of a way. There is a way of having bia with a woman who's still a virgin and her not and not breaking the hymen and not causing her to have the blood that a virgin usually has. There's a way of doing it. It's called hataya, and there's a way of doing it. Okay. So do we say that whoever impregnated this woman did that?
Yep, she can't get pregnant if the hymen's not broken.
He knows of a way. He knows of a way to do it. He knows of a way.
I know a good book about it.
The hymen's not complicated. There was a story that Mary.
I don't think it's the hymen that stops the zera from getting in. That's something else. So there's a way of doing it either way. You will be surprised how often this Shmuel statement of Shmuel comes up in Shas, in Seder Nashim. Here it comes up in Chagiga in the context. Now, so what's the question? So the question for Ben Zoma is, it's a very simple question, really. Do we consider the idea, this woman is a virgin, so do we consider that, or at least she claims to be, do we consider the idea that the person who impregnated her did that, and therefore she's not a virgin?
Before Asura
and that should be Asura the Kohen Gadol, or meaning she may have even been married before, or do we say that some other way it happened? What would be the other way that it happened? Amar Lahu Shmuel Lo Shchiach says, we don't assume that somebody did what Shmuel did. Not everybody knows how to do what Shmuel did, so we don't assume for that. But Chayshin and Shemem Ba'ambati Ibra. She was in the bathtub, and there was some leftover zera in there, and it got in her somehow, and that's how she became pregnant. Okay, now, before we go any further, by the way, there's a problem, there's a textual problem with this Gemara, a chronological problem, which is that Shmuel is an Amora, exactly. Shmuel is an Amora, and Ben Zoma is a Tana, so it's impossible for Ben Zoma to quote Shmuel. So it's obvious that the editors of the Gemara came in afterwards. Shmuel is often cited with this teaching, and they inserted it over here, meaning in the name of Ben Zoma. Okay, fine. Let's get past that. So he suggests that really she became pregnant in some other way, and therefore she's Mutaris the Kohen Gadol. So the Gemara says, V'hamar Shmuel kol shichva zera she'enu yorak hachetz enu mezrat. Oh, it has to be done derech bia. In other words, in order to pregnant a woman, it has to be shot into her, so to speak. So the Gemara says, no, mi'ikar nami yorak hachetz hava. No, that's not what Shmuel meant. Shmuel didn't mean that it has to occur through the act of bia. It just means that it had to have left the man in a healthy, normal way. If it didn't leave the man in a normally healthy way, then it doesn't have the capacity to impregnate. I don't know the science of this. But if it left the man in a normal way and then it ended up in the ambatya, then it could impregnate her. Okay. Now you'll be surprised, once again, not only how often this shows up, but how important it is. Halacha lemaisa. In the 20th century, 21st century. Turn to your sheets. We'll get to the Masha in a second. Turn to your sheets, the second source on your sheet. The Igros Moshe.
Can you share with Robbie?
What is this, midline? Is this going to be terrible? Is this going to be really bad?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, so can I have the...
No, it's much healthier than Coke. You should have.
Can you pass down the pink one, though?
It's much healthier.
I'm good, I have.
We have
to try that after.
It's one step.
Seems to be free on the market.
So here, so in the Igros Moshe of Moshe Feinstein, in the second source over here, Halchala harofe v'zarak birichma zera shel ish acher shelo b'shus bala. He's talking about a case where a woman was with a man for many, many years, and they weren't able to have children, and it was... I don't mean to say it this way, but it was his fault, right? So it's his fault that they're not able to have children. Now, technically, she doesn't have a chiyuv to have children, but they want to. So they go to the doctor, and the doctor impregnates her with zera from a random person. Shelo b'rishut ba'ala. It's not from her husband. Okay? Nishal...
He's against it.
Who, Rav Moshe?
The
Baal. The Baal. Oh, you're right, actually. I'm sorry. You're right. It wasn't even his... He didn't even give permission. Yeah. Shelo b'shut Baala. V'nish'al me'abal imu teres lo. He was... This person who's writing the question to Rav Moshe was asked from the husband, imu teres lo. First of all, is she still allowed... No. If she's still allowed to be with him. No, because it could be considered... Could be considered... Exactly. It could be considered adultery. The echu din havlad, and also what's the status of the child? Okay. These are very, very important questions. Hine barur shavelo bias ish lo nesra ish lebala. For sure, she does not become asura because there was no act of bia. The iser sota lebala who rak mitzad iser habia velo mitzad hazera shel ish acher. It's just because of the bia. It has nothing to do with the zera. Sheyesh b'me'eha. It has nothing to do with the child that grows within her. Din bala ish acher af bebia shelo yatz hazera. Because think about it, if she had slept with another man and there was no child, that wouldn't affect whether or not it was adultery. That would still be adultery. Even if it was lo kedarka, bi asher lo kedarka, that would still be osered labala. She'd still be asur labala. V'im bazer legufa shelo mibia, but if the zera would come into her body, not through an act of bia, for instance, like the case mentioned in the Gemara in Chagiga, of the ambati, of the bathtub, where it gets into her that way, she does not become asur labala. V'chein havlad hu kasher, and the vlad is kasher. Shiga mamzirut hu rak kasheyeh ayude bia, because mamzirut is a function of bia. It's not a function of the wrong father with the wrong mother. It's a function of the act of bia, which creates mamzirus. V'amsha vlad mamzer af bofen shedavkum nachrim zebazu shelo ivro al ha'iser mishum shayu anusim. And even though it's true that you could have a mamzer through rape with a non-Jew, mikom akom haya zerach derech bia shuznus avav benis abra al yedei shenichnas hazerah shel acher b'me'eha ba'ambati shenizkar b'gemara ukahada osin harofim bismanenu. And like what the doctors do in our day with IVF and that, eino mamzer. And even if the zera came from one of her relatives, that she would be asur, even out of the context of marriage. So there's a story, the historical figure of Ben Sira, one of the apocryphal books. He's mentioned in a few different Gemaras. As being, I think, contemporaneous with Shlomo, I want to say, but I'm not sure. There's a lot of stories about him in the Gemara, non-Jew, that they say he was born this way, through the Ambati story. Umafurish betaz, v'chein babach, shehevi me'agos asmak, v'shem harav peretz, dekevan she'ein kan bias iser avlad kasher legamri, afil tisaber, mishichvat zera shel acher, ki halo ben siro kasher haya, v'chein mashma b'beit shmuel, because ben siro was a kasher, he wasn't a mamzer. However, with one caveat, if you do know who the father was, if you know who the father was, then of course the child cannot then marry a relative of his father, his biological father. His biological father is still his biological father, right? And his mother is his mother, obviously. Kedisa betasha. In this case, however, where you don't know who the father is, so what do? So you go basaruba, you assume that the person is not Jewish. You assume the father is not Jewish because most of the zera in the bank is not going to be Jews. Right? And he goes further and he says, Aval ha'emes she'en lachusha zera ha'am mishal yehudi. And you don't even have to worry about that. Kemen sha'arov ha'mishal nochrim. Delvad she'ha'arim shalanu v'chol ha'midina ha'mirov nochrim. Rav Moshe is living in either Russia or America at this point. So for sure, Lithuania. Everything is going to be non-Jewish. Elu ha'motzim ha'zera shalhem l'davar zeh v'adei rov nochrim. And anyways, most of the people who do this kind of thing are non-Jews. Most Jews don't do this. Great question. I'll go even further. And even if the doctor says it's a Jew, look at this line. This is great. I love this part. Why wouldn't you believe him? Because he's probably just telling her that because he thinks she wants to hear that he's a Jew. That's good marketing, because no doubt she's a nice Jewish woman. She wants a Jewish father for her child. Right? Even if she's a non-Jew, he would tell her that.
Where does...
Where does Rav Moshe learn all this from? Where does he?
What, the last thing
these,
he said?
No, all these principles. Like, where did they come from?
Well, he said the story about the Ben Sira. He had this thing from the Ben Sira.
If we go back to the Gemara, where did they learn that? What possible?
Well, the Gemara doesn't say anything. Our Gemara doesn't say anything about this.
Well, it says Ba'atzachem, right? Ba'atzachem.
That was about the dog.
That was about the dog. Sorry, yeah. The second part about the.
That was
the
a question of whether or not we believe. Okay. Whether we assume that it was a man that did it, or whether we assume that it came from the bathtub, and Ben Zoma said that we assume
what
it came from
the
bathtub.
Principles.
He said, I mean, not only here, in many places, but it sounds like it's mostly based on Ben Azai and also on the Taz, and mostly on Svara. I mean, the Svara makes a lot of sense. It's the Bia that creates the Issa. Now, who disagreed? The Satmar Rebbe disagreed. Satmar Rebbe felt that all of those cases were Mamzerim. Satmar Rebbe felt that all of these cases of IVF, it's all Mamzerus. It's a big tumult at the time. Don't think that's assumed nowadays. I think Moshe is valid. With the exception of...
Rabbi Yosef called it Dora Mabel.
Did he? Yeah.
What do you call it?
Dora Mabel.
Right. The only question...
About it. What happened? He was asked about it. He doesn't right. say answer, he just says Dora Mabel.
Right, right. Wow. So this is what Moshe sheet.
Shlomo Zalman.
If this happened, then
Zalman.
I believe that nowadays.
And then marry Zalman, and then they work out later in life.
That's a bad. That's bad. It's the same reason why nowadays. Usually, when people look to adopt children, they try to, when they drop like small children, you want to raise a child from a baby, so they try to find non-Jews to adopt and then convert them, and then when they grow up, they have to have Kabbalah sentences when they grow up. And the reason is to avoid a situation where if you have, it's a Jewish baby and you don't know who the parents are, so then you don't know, it's a small world, right? And you don't know if the child grows up, it could be that they could end up marrying a relative. So we try to find non-Jewish babies where we don't have that chashash.
Most of the poskim today don't have any problem with IVF, as long as it's done there Machon Torah.
Machon Torah, I know the thing is generally to find there from a non-Jew.
No, it's better to find it from a non-Jew. It's best to find it from a non-Jew. Because the child is going to be Jewish anyways.
Exactly.
Child's going to be Jewish anyways. We discussed this, right? Child's going to be Jewish anyways because she's Jewish. Mother's Jewish. Child's going to be Jewish no matter what.
Depends if the problem's the man or the woman. If the problem's the woman, then they prefer the woman to be Jewish.
You're talking about from a
If you have a problem with a trauma, if you have a problem with a woman being able to carry the child, then they want a Jewish woman.
Oh, you mean the surrogate mother.
Way around, yeah.
Right, the surrogate mother. Yeah. Right.
There's a Shlomo Zalman Greenberg. Greenberg Gagal Zan, his name's the quote.
Shlomo Zalman. What?
No, not Shlomo Zalman.
You're talking about, and now you messed me up. I know who you're talking about, and I can't say his name anymore.
His name's Gagal Zan. I met with him. It's fascinating.
Oh, you're talking about somebody else.
No, he's
Zan like... Zalman Nechemia.
Gold.
Now you messed up. I don't know his last name anymore. Because of you.
Goldberg.
I have smicha from him. And I don't even know, and you messed me up.
Yeah.
I have your day of smicha from him.
Wow.
I could say this on tape because I've told this story so many times, it doesn't matter. When I was in Gross, a lot of people in Israel have smicha from Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who doesn't even know them. The reason is because he gives you open book tests. He gives you a test with like 70 questions. He has smicha for Shabbos, Yerodea, and other things as well. And he gives you a test that you take home. And you have as much time as you want, and you can use any svarim that you want. He gives you're on the honor system that you're answering the questions. It's in Jerusalem, yeah. You have to go upstairs. Yeah. And he just gives it to you, and then you come back with the test, and you give it to him. Now, usually, you come back, and he gives you a faher, kind of quizzes you to make sure that you actually, filled it out yourself, and you really know your stuff. Now, with guys who are in Grus, and we're studying Yerodea anyways, so a lot of guys just go, they take the test as like a nice chazara, like to make sure that they actually know it. So that's what I did. And I remember I came to him, I told him I'm in Grus. He said, oh, okay, how's Rabbi Miller? He knows Rabbi Miller. Very nice, gave me the test. I'll tell you right now, I took it, I went home, it took me spent like a month on it or something like that, and I'd already learned everything. The questions aren't easy, but you want to do it nicely. I typed all my answers. I don't think most people do that. I came back. I had typed answers with like a staple at the top corner. First of all, I can tell you I came on a Friday morning, and it was morning. It was before noon. And he was in his Shabbos clothes, and the table was set. And he was like ready for Shabbos. It was in the morning. Anyways, I gave it to him. And he said, okay. And he didn't ask me anything. And then he said, I said, when should I come back? He said, you can come back in a week. I came back in a week. I called beforehand. I walked in. He said, who are you? I explained who I was. And he said, okay, let me go find your test. And he goes and he finds it. And he takes it out of like, I had put it in this plastic. I looked at it. The corners had not been even, he hadn't even opened it. Hadn't even opened it. He looked at it. He said, you're in Gross with Rabbi Miller. I said, yeah. He said, okay, very good. And he took out a tuda of smicha and he just filled it out. And he gave it to me. Because he assumed, and Rabbi Miller told me afterwards, he does that with all the Gross guys. He assumed that if you're in Gross with Rabbi Miller and you took the bichinas and you know you're there, then you're fine. And he gave me smicha. Should I not tell that story?
I knew there was.
He doesn't do that. He doesn't do that. People stop. But if you're in Gross,
recorded mono. You recorded stereo.
If you're in Gross, I have smicha from YU as well. It's not what I rely on. Actually, Bekoshi, I could probably find it. I don't even know where it is.
How do you know that you were in Gross other than you told him?
A smicha candidate wouldn't lie, right?
I don't know. Maybe he just looked at my test. He's like, I'm not reading this. It was like cages. So, anyways, it was not an easy test. So, anyways, where were we? So, yeah, so we got Rav Moshe. So that was Rav Moshe on this. Okay, now let's go back. No, you know what? Actually, let's stay on the sheet for a second. We'll do it a little bit differently this time. I go to the top. We'll go back to the Maharsha at the top. The Maharsha, right? Maharsha is on a Gadita. Maharsha is on both. Maharsha is on the Gemara, usually on Tosfos, but it's also a classic source on a Gadita. So he has on this whole story. So he says, "Ubesefer Yashan Matzati Vezelishono Nichnesu Lepardes Hachochma Vehi Chochmat Ha'elokut." Right? That doesn't really help. But what he says is that they were studying the wisdom, divine wisdom, right? Whatever that means, divine wisdom. Benaza hits it umes mitoch shedavkan afsho ba'ahavara ba'advekut amiti bedvarim elyonim. In other words, Benaza didn't do anything wrong. He just got really close and he became enraptured basically with God. Shem yisodav hitzit ba'or hazahir nitparda min haguf uvenitpashta mikol mikre haguf. He became completely non-physical. Upotasha ra'ata menucha kitov. In other words, Ben Azai, this is a good thing. He came so close to God that basically his soul flew out of his body. He was no longer physical, and that's what it means that he died. Okay. The problem wasn't that, you see God, you die. Because Moshe was able to see God very close up, and he didn't die. So that wasn't the problem. It wasn't the problem. He got close to God. He didn't want to be there anymore, and he left his body.
How would Maharsha know this? And we're talking about a Gadita. Where would he be bringing...
Well, he's actually bringing this from a Sefer Yashan. But how would he know this? This is how he's reading. Well, I mean, I think part of it is what's the difference between Ben Azai and Ben Zalma? Right? Why is that one of them, died and one of them became crazy? And
why is the others, why does Rabbi Akiva walk out
fine? Well, we'll have to see. He's going to explain it. He's trying to explain what's the difference between all four of them. How does he know this? I don't know.
Is Sefer Yashan got capital letters?
What do you mean?
I mean, is there a book called Sefer Yashan?
Yeah. No. Yeah, it's old book.
We don't know which book.
I don't know. Yeah.
Which book?
No. Ben Zoma hitzitz v'nifka, shelo haya shalem b'ma'alot u'b'yishuv hadat k'ben Azai. He was not as balanced as Ben Azai. Mitoch shehitzitz gamu ba'or habahir yoter, mima shehaita dato sovelet, nitbalbelu etzlo hadvarim. He became confused, we're going to see. He became confused. V'nitrefa da'ato ka'adam nifka. She'eno me'asig ha'dvarim al buryan v'zeo pentis ba'enu v'ika'ato. He was imbibing of these truths, but he didn't properly understand them because he wasn't centered. And therefore, instead of it elevating him, it just confused him. He became confused, and we're going to see that. Ve'alisha acher hisig shetzchios Yisrael hem biyado v'chashav shehem beiz reshuyos. Ve'lachach nikra mekatitz benetios shekitzei tzadvarim hamiyuchadim v'hifridan ze mize ve'amar shehem beiz reshuyos. Now, where does he get this from? You could ask at this point. He's saying Elisha ben Abuya believed that they were two deities. Now, he's not making that part up. We're going to see the Gemara says that explicitly. He's just giving us a sneak preview. V'zeu b'chlal oved Elohim acherim shal korchak nikra acher v'hayodea sod Elohim acherim yodea ze el boryo u'ma sha'amar dafku l'matatron u'mechiyuhu shitin pulsin denura. We're going to see that in a few minutes about matatron. Kach herolu la'acher l'fi machshavto ba'eret kedei l'hodiyo she'en sham ela reshut echad bilvad. I'll explain that in a few minutes. We'll just remind me what the Marsha said, and when we see that in the Gemara, I'll explain that. Okay, skip past this part. Rabbi Kiva, Allah b'shalom. What happened to Rabbi Kiva? V'yarad b'shalom. Allah v'katav omer mashchini acharecha. Now, this is interesting. He quotes the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, mashchini acharecha narutza, haviyana melech adarav. Which means, pull me after you, and I will come. Bring me into your inner chambers. Shahaya Rabbi Kiva shalem b'chol min ha'shlemut, u'ksheigia l'gvul sasechal ha'noshi, I afshar l'hagia elav, amad. V'lo haras la'alot al Hashem. Why did Rabbi Kiva survive without any of these adverse effects? Because once he got to the point where he saw that if he continued, something would happen to him, what did he do? He stopped. He held back. That's why what happened to the rest of them didn't happen to him. Now, I don't know what he means by this pasuk. Because this pasuk says, Mashchini acharecha narutza, pull me after you and I will come. I have no idea what that means. Because the pasuk sounds like he's going to continue. And yet, the Marsha is reading it as though it means to stop. I don't know why he's saying that.
Of course, he's holding his hand, so when he stops, he also stops.
He says, "Klomar shenimshach acher hamoshech." But you end up getting pulled in, no?
No, you hold his hand, so if he stops, he stops too.
Mm. Okay, but why would he stop? Why would the moshech stop? Okay. V'afal bishe hizig ma shehizig acher lo ta'aketa uto. And even though he actually did see what acher saw, he didn't make the same mistake that Acher did. Okay? Fine. All right, so that's how the Marsha explains it. Let's go weiter in the Gemara. Find one more statement from Benzoma, and then we'll get to Acher. Tanu Rabbanan, the Braisa says, Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya shai omed al gav ma'la b'har abayis. He was standing on har abayis, ra'ahu Benzoma. And Benzoma saw him, v'lo amad milafanav. And Benzoma didn't stand for Rabbi Yoshua. He should have. Amr lo me'ayin ula'ayin Benzoma. He says, where are you? Where are you, you space cadet? Benzoma, where are you? You know, what's going on with you? Amarlo, tzofa hayiti ben mayim ha'elyonim l'mayim hatachtonim. I was thinking about the upper waters and the lower waters. I think this may shed light on the mayim part from before. Ve'ein ben zelaze ela shalosh etzbaot bilvad, shne'amar v'ruach alehim merachefet al pnei ha'mayim, ki yona shemerachefet al baneha v'ne'eno nogat. He says, I was thinking about the upper waters and the lower waters, because there's not anything in between them except for three fingers' breaths. They're close to each other, but they're not touching. Because it says, Ruach alim merachefet al pnei ha'mayim, ki yonah shemerachefet al baneha, like a yonah, which goes very close to its children, but doesn't actually touch them. Okay? That's Benzoma's teaching. He says, the mayim al yonim, the mayim tachtonim, they were very, very close, but they weren't touching. Okay? Rabbi Yeshua says, I don't know what he's talking about. Amar lan Rabbi Yeshua Talmidav, Adayin Benzoma mi bachutz. He's still outside. We'll get to what that means. He's still outside. Mechti v'ruach alim rechevet al pnei ha'mayim, eimat have. When is that pasuk from? Ruach alim rechevet al pnei ha'mayim. That's the third pasuk in the Torah, right? That's before anything happens. B'yom arishon havdala b'yom sheni. But the upper waters and the lower waters don't become separate from each other until the second day. That's on the second day. So how can you say that? They must be touching until then, because otherwise, how do you be mavdil? So how close? So now the Gemara, so Rabbi Yoshua says, Benzoma doesn't know what he's talking about. He's confused, right? Now the Gemara is going to wonder, though, so how do we relate to the waters? So v'kama, Amar Ravacha bar Yaakov, k'mali neima, that what separates them is like a hair, which means almost nothing. V'rabbanan amri, kiguda de gamla. Kiguda de gamla? What was it? Sorry, one second. The space between two planks on a bridge, which is basically no space. They're resting on each other, right? But there's still two separate bodies. And then Marzut Ravitam Rabasi Amar Kitre Glime de Frise Ahadade. It's like two garments, two clothing that are spread on top of each other, even closer, because they're actually, you know, the creases go into each other, right? Because they're fabric. And then finally, like two cups, one cup inside the other. They have the same shapes. They actually go into each other physically. Okay, what does that actually mean? I don't even know. But the idea is that they're actually touching each other. And the idea over here is that Benzoma is confused. Benzoma thinks that there's a separation between them. So what does that mean, though? This is clear that this part of Benzoma is definitely after the Pardes story, because Rabbi Yeshua is commenting on the idea that Benzoma is not all there anymore. So what does it mean? What's the connection? So we know Rabbi Akiva said, be careful not to say mayim mayim, right? Right, perhaps, right? Perhaps Benzoma is his impression is that there was a separation. So what does that mean? What could that mean?
It's confusing one with the other.
He's confusing them with each other? Okay.
He may be using the Ruach Elohim or Chefet as a measure, as opposed to suggesting that the Ruach Elohim was in between the two waters that didn't split the next day.
Okay. So I saw there's a sefer called Meshilach, which is by the Eshbitzer Rebbe, which is a very radical Hasidic work. A lot of wild ideas that make people very uncomfortable in that book, but also very, very original, very, very interesting. And one of the comments he makes over there, he actually comments on this Gemara, and he suggests the idea that Benzoma, when he saw was such a large difference between the spiritual world and the physical world. And so he felt that from the beginning of the Bria, the Mayim Elyonim and the Mayim Tachtonim, if the metaphor there is the upper worlds versus the lower worlds, is they're actually not touching each other. That there's a relatively large, you know, it's larger than zero, separation between them. And so he felt that you can't reconcile the way that he puts it, is the Cheshek Ra and the Cheshek Tov. That we're living a dual life and it'll always be dual. That you can't both have tava and have a yetzer tov at the same time. You have to pick one or the other, and so they're totally separate from each other. And maybe that's what kind of like what he was obsessed with. We know that Ben Azai, the Gemara says on the one hand that he didn't marry, right? But that's not true. He did marry. He married Rabbi Kiva's daughter, but then they immediately got divorced. They never had any children. And the Gemara says the reason Ben Azai wasn't able to stay married is because he said, I'm so involved in Torah, that's my first love, I can't get involved with anything else. He couldn't interact with that part of his life, which was kind of driven by Tava, even in a good way. And perhaps that's what this means. And that's what happened to him when he went to Pardes. He felt, you know, there's this other world going on, and I want to be in there, and I can't come back down.
Sounds rather Christian.
Well, it sounds ascetic. It sounds ascetic.
That's what they say.
Why? You mean Catholic, that don't Catholic, that yeah, the Catholic, priests don't get married. Priests, that's what you mean.
Yeah.
Say it, but I mean, asceticism has roots in Judaism. There is the ascetic movement. A lot of the Hasidic Ashkenaz were that way. There's a reactionary.
Nozze is not good.
Right. Well, that's a question, right? In other words, depends who you ask. There's, yeah. So Rashi, you know, Ramban says, why you bring a korban chatas? Because you stopped being a nazir. Yeah, that's what he says. You have different, you know, meaning they both. These are tracks. These are tracks that the world has kind of, at different periods in time, gone on. But either way, Ben Azai is his own person. Ben Azai maybe he's a yachid. This is what was valid for Ben Azai. He couldn't get past it.
But he's similar to Rav Shmuel Bar Yochai.
And with the burning and everything.
He couldn't come back.
But he did eventually.
Yeah.
He did eventually.
But there's two different motivations. Depending on the motivation, it could mean something different. Either it could mean that he just could not involve himself with the physical world because he wanted to just be in the spiritual world and kind of, right? Or it could mean that he didn't trust himself to deal with the Talbot of the physical world. So he separated himself.
Right.
He couldn't meet the challenge of trying
right.
to
see the perhaps like once it had been revealed, maybe that's the difference between him and Rabbi Kiva. He let himself be completely open to that world, and then once he came back down, he couldn't handle it anymore. And maybe Rabbi Kiva said, you know what, I'm going to distance myself a little bit so that I don't have that problem, because I know that I have to live in this world for now.
The pasuk he's quoting is Ruach Elokim Chevet al Panei Hamayim.
Right.
So it seems to be implying that the spirit of Hashem is actually on the lower water.
But in the end,
which is
he
the
says,
opposite of what?
But in the end, it's separated. And that's what Rabbi Yeshua disagreed with him about. That Rabbi Yeshua says that there is no separation at all. It's true that Ben Hazi says they're close. Ben Zoma says they're close, but they're not touching.
But that's the. Isn't there there's the lower water, there's the upper water, then there's the Ruach Elokim, which is somehow closer to the lower water.
On the first day, they're mixed.
Right, that's true. That's the whole objection, right?
What do you mean? The Ruach Elohim Merachefet al Pnei HaMayim? I assume in this context that the Ruach Elohim is the Mayim al Yonim?
Oh, I thought it was something.
Ruach Elohim Merachefet al Pnei HaMayim, what does it say?
In Ben Zoma's explanation, it must be the El Yonim.
What is it? Well, it doesn't really explain. I mean, it gets into the Rakia, this dome. Okay. Get into it. Okay. Now we're finally. Oh, actually, no. Turn to the sheets for a minute. We don't have to go through this whole thing. I put a lot of it on. I probably could have made it shorter, but it's for your own reading later if you want. The Rambam, at the end of his Mor Nevuchim, talks about Ben Zoma. And he says he's going to begin the subject of the chapter with a simile. I'll leave it to you with whether this is a simile or a metaphor. It's up to you. They need the word like to make this a simile, and I don't see it anywhere. So either way, the story is that there's a king in a palace, and all of his subjects are all throughout the country. Some of them are closer, some of them are further. And he says some of them have their backs turned towards the king's palace, and they face the other direction. Some of them are trying to go to the palace, but they're not there yet. Some of them aren't even as close to seeing the wall of the house. There are some that are inside the gates. There are some that are actually at the palace, but they're walking around the gates looking for the entrance. Some of them have gotten through the gate. Some of them are walking around in the antechamber. And some of them are even in the inner part of the palace. And some of them are even in the room with the king. And there are some who are in the room with the king, but can't see him or speak to them. And there are some who can. Okay, that's the metaphor. What is the nimshal? So he says in the second paragraph, the people who are abroad, the ones who aren't even close, are all those who have no religion, neither one based on speculation, nor one received by tradition. And these are irrational beings, not as human beings. They are below mankind, but above monkeys. Since they have the form and shape of man and a mental faculty above that of the monkey. Okay. Those who are in the country but have their backs turned towards the king's palace are those who possess religion, belief, and thought, but happen to hold false doctrines, which they either adopted in consequence of great mistakes made in their own speculations or received from others who misled them. And he actually says these are worse than the first class because they actually lead others astray. And under certain circumstances, it may become necessary to delay them and to extirpate their doctrines in order that others should not be misled. Then there are those who desire to arrive at the palace and to enter it, but have never seen it. These are the mass of religious people. The multitude that observe the divine commandments but are ignorant. These are amaratzim, but who are religious. Those who arrive at the palace but go round about it are those who devote themselves exclusively to the study of the practical law. Okay, that sounds pretty good, no? People who study Allah al-Maisa. They believe traditionally in true principles of faith and learn the practical worship of God, but are not trained in the philosophical treatment of the principles of the law. So here the Rambam gets Rambamish. And do not endeavor to establish the truth of their faith by proof. Those who undertake to investigate the principles of religion have come into the antechamber, and there is no doubt that those can also be divided into different grades, but those who have succeeded in finding a proof for everything that can be proved, who have a true knowledge of God so far as a true knowledge can be attained, and are near the truth, wherever an approach to the truth is possible, they have reached the goal and are in the palace in which the king lives. In other words, the closer you get towards proving truth, that brings you closer and closer. Now he says, my son, so long as you are engaged in studying the mathematical sciences and logic, you belong to those who go round about the palace in search of the gate. Thus, our sages figuratively use the phrase, Benzoma is still outside. So he considers Benzoma to have still be outside the gate. That's what he meant by Bachutz. That's what Rabbi Yeshua meant by Bachutz. That he had not yet entered into the palace. In other words, he didn't understand physics. When you understand physics, you have entered the hall. Okay? And when after completing the study of natural philosophy, you master metaphysics, okay, you have entered the innermost court and are with the king in the same palace. Then you have attained the degree of the wise men, who include men of different grades of perfection. Okay. Goes on and so forth. And he says, the more you become intellectually and philosophically attached to truth, that brings you closer and closer. And that's what Ben Zoma's problem was. Is that the most simple reading of the Gemara? All right. I don't know. Okay, now we get to Elisha ben Abuya. We have a little bit of time left. We'll get to him now. Where are we? Okay. Acher kitzitz benetios. It's the sixth wide line. Right in the middle. Acher kitzitz benetios. Alav akasav omer al titen espicha lachti es pesarcha. This is what he says, that you shouldn't let your mouth cause your body to sin. Mayhi chaza mitatron. The isyava le reshusa lemesav lichtav zchusa di Yisrael. He saw the angel matatron, who was at that time when he went to Pardes. At that time, he was sitting and writing down the merits and the demerits of Bnei Israel. All right, that's what he saw. He saw an angel basically writing in the book, in the big book. Amar gemira de lamala lahave lo yeshiva velo tachrut velo oref lo ipui shemachas v'shalom beit reshuyos hen. He said, you know, I always thought that there was only one God, but now I see that there is more than one who is who's in charge over here. Why is Matatron doing it? Is Hashem tired? Is Hashem tired and he gives permission to Matatron to start doing this? Now at that moment, afkuhu lematatron umichyuhu shisin pulsi denura. So they took out Matatron, the other angels took out Matatron, and they gave him 60 pulsi denura, lashes of fire. That's where that comes from. Right, the pulsa denura, that's the thing, that's the curse that they the cultish people do for whatever. So that's where this comes from. They gave him 60 lashes of fire.
60?
Yeah. Shisin. Amrle mai taima. He said, what I do? Matatron said, what I do? Ki chazis elokam to mikamei, because when he saw you, you didn't get up and stop. Mikamei is yahile reshusa lemimcha buschusa da acher. So then, what did he want to do? They gave him permission to erase the merits of Acher, right? That he was gonna get rid of all the merits of Acher. Yatz the baskalvam mashuvu banim shovivim chutz mi Acher, right? The famous thing that a heavenly voice came out and said, shuvu banim shovivim, that's a pasuk, and then chutz mi Acher, right? So that's what, and then Acher heard this, Amar, ho v'itrit hau gavra mi hau alma, lipok lishani b'hai alma. And Acher heard this bas kol, and he said, since this guy, meaning himself, Acher, right? Since this guy is not going to be able to get into the next world, he might as well enjoy this world. Ishane ba'hai alma. Nafak Acher l'tarbus ra'a. And so he went to the bad culture, which means he went off the derech. Nafak eshkach zona. He went and he found the harlot, Tava, and he went to proposition her. And what did she say? Are you that rabbi? Akar pugla mimishra b'shabbos. What did he do? He pulled out. It's known. He pulled out. He did. I believe he did. what's it called? Yeah, he uprooted a radish. He did kotzer. He did something you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. He did a malacha. And she immediately said, what did she say? She named him again. What did she say? Amra Acherhu. You must be someone else. That's where he got his name. You're not Elisha ben Avuya, you're some other person. Because she saw what he did. Sha'al Acher et Rabbi Meir, la'achar shiyatza l'tarbus ra'ah. Acher had a conversation with the Rabbi Meir after he'd already gone off the derech. Amra le'may dechtiv gamet ze lumat ze. You know what it says in the Torah? It says in, what does it say? In Koheles, v'yom tova heye betov v'yom ra'ah rei gamet ze lumat ze, that this and that. These two, there's always going to be parallelism in the world. Hashem created everything in parallel. Asa Elohim Amar Lo Kol Masha Bara Kadosh Baruch Hu Bara Kenegdo Bara Harim Bara Gvaos. He made mountains. He made valleys. Bara Yamin Bara Naharos. Amar Lo Bikiva Rabcha Lo Amar Kach Ela Bara Tzadikim Bara Rishayim. He made tzadikim. He made Rishayim. Bara Gan Eden Bara Gehinom. Kol Echad VeEchad Yesh Lo Beis Chalakim Echad BeGan Eden VeEchad BeGehinom. Zacha Tzadik Natol Chelko. Every single person has a chelik in Gan Eden and a chelik in Gehinom. If the tzaddik is zocha, he can get even the chelek of himself and the chelek of his Rasha friend, began Eden. This chayev Rasha, not al chelko, but not al chelek avero. And if the Rasha becomes chayev, so he'll get his chelek in Gehenim, and even somebody else's chelek in Gehenim. Amar mishar shei mai kra, gabi tzaddikim ksiv lachen ba'artzam mish... how do you pronounce this? Tachas b'shtechem mishne uchlima yaron uchalkam lachin baratzam mishne yurashu b'simchat olam tiyesh lahem. Right, the mishne, the double portion. Mishne yurashu gabar rishayim ksevu mishne shivron shivram. So he feels like he's, you know, Acher is losing even his portion, his good portion, and our mayor is going to get it. Shal Acher etzer mayor la Acher shiatzal tabas ra. Again, he asks him another question. May dechtiv lo yarchena zahav uschuchis utmurasa klipaz. What's this pasuk talking about again? Gold and glass cannot approximate it, nor can its exchange be in golden articles. Right? Wisdom, chachma is so great; it's greater than gold and greater than golden glass. Really nice things. Amrlo elu divrei Torah shekashin leknosan kaklei zav uklei paz. They're hard to get, divrei Torah. V'nochin la'abdan kaklei zchuchis. They're as hard to acquire as gold, but they're as easy to be destroyed and to lose as glass. They can be lost in an instant. They're very precious. Amar Bikiva Rabcha lo amar kach, elamakli zav okli zchuchis afa bishnishbo yesh lam takana. But Bikiva said, yeah, but even though glass can be destroyed, it can also be reformed. You can always reblow it and reform the glass. Af tamar chacham afa bishasarach yesh la takana. They're having these conversations. The mayor is trying to encourage Elisha ben Avuya to return, saying you can always come back. Amrlo afata chazar becha, come back. Amrlo kvar shamati miacharei pargod. You don't understand. My fate has already been decided. I heard miacharei pargod from the other side of the curtain. Shuvu banim shofivim chutz miacher. I can't ever come back. The Baskel said chutz miacher. Take a look at the at our sheet over here on the bottom. All the way in the last source. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik in a lecture. I found it online. I'm pretty sure I've seen it in print. The place that I found it online said it was only in a Yiddish lecture. But I'm pretty sure I've seen it somewhere, but I couldn't find it while I was preparing. So Soloveitchik says, he was talking about Elisha ben Avuya, and he says, I believe, he's saying, is Acher right? Is it true? Can he really not return? Is there no chance for Acher? Okay, but is he right? Well, what's the Baskel talking about? What? But the Baskel said, Shuvu banim shuvim chutz me'acher. He can't come back. Is it true? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says yes and no. I believe that we can find the true intent of the heavenly voice, and you'll see, by examining the differing versions of this story as found in the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi. So we can ask, how in fact did the heavenly voice address this sinner? Did it call out to him using his real name, Elisha ben Avuya, or did it use his pseudonym, Acher? The answer is very simple. The endearing words, return, O bastardizing children, were surely addressed to Elisha ben Avuya himself. It was he whom the heavenly voice pleaded with, and sought to draw near like a mother who always finds something positive in her child. However, the concluding phrase, except for Acher, was addressed to Acher. In this, the Talmud Bavli records the correct version of the words of the heavenly voice by which the Shekhinah sought to bring Elisha closer to herself while repulsing Acher. Why? Because the real Tana, who was a sage of Israel, whom Rebbe even quotes in Perkei Avos, never sinned. never betrayed Knesset Yisrael, never identified with the Romans, and never sought to tear Jewish children away from the Torah and the fear of heaven. It was another person, Acher, who was the traitor. In other words, yes, Shuvu banim shovavim, Ralisha banu buya, you can always come back, as long as you leave Acher behind. You need to leave Acher behind. Acher can never return. Acher cannot transform himself. You need to leave that part of your personality behind. It cannot be reintegrated. There's a great book by C.S. Lewis. It's called The Divorce, which is this... some of you may have heard of the book The Screwtape Letters, maybe. That's also by C.S. Lewis. He also wrote... Okay, the book you've heard of is The Chronicles of Narnia. Okay, The Chronicles of Narnia, a famous series. So he was... right, exactly. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is the first book of the Chronicles of Narnia, which, of course, everybody finds out when they're an adult. That is really
about
Christianity, which, you know, he didn't do a very good job because
nobody figured it out
when they were kids, right? We read it in my Jewish elementary school in third grade, and it was nobody, right? So anyways, he wrote a few other books. He's a brilliant writer, a brilliant thinker. And one of his books called The Divorce, which is not very well known, is this... you know, obviously fictional account of a person who is who's finds himself in purgatory and then makes his way up to this kind of like pre-heaven location where these souls are trying to be wooed by these souls who have already reached heaven, trying to be convinced to kind of do tshuva, to kind of repent for their lives on earth so that they can enter into heaven. And each soul has a different problem and they're trying to be coaxed and like prodded to basically to abandon their promise, to give up, to kind of let go. And one of the souls has this kind of small, ugly version of himself, which like is almost visible. And as the kind of soul who's the angel who's coming to talk to him to try to convince him, he's talking about like, you know, just give up on all that stuff. And this little ugly, you know, Yetzirah almost, but it's really him speaking his voice, is kind of like saying, no, don't do it. It's a trick. And they're going to be trying to get rid of you. And it starts to grow as the real soul shrinks. And the angel's like, no, don't listen to him. And it's growing and growing. And eventually it becomes too big. And then the real soul shrinks and it doesn't exist anymore because he can't let go of his past. He can't let go of this... of this growth that he's allowed to grow, and that's kind of like what this reminds me of is Elisha ben Avihu has become Acher, even though he's not really Acher. By definition, Acher is Acher, but he's let it take over his life, and that's what he can't let go of. Even though he still has inside of himself Elisha ben Avihu of Salvific says, if he'll just let go, he can come back, but he can't because he won't. He has this in a lot of places, actually. Rabbi Soloveitchik has a brilliant interpretation of the Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about how do you know when there are a few people who are pasul edus, a gambler, a thief, all these people, and he says, how do you know when this person has done enough tshuva that they can now be qualified for testimony again? So he says, based on the Gemara, he says, it's when they get rid of the accoutrements, like the things that they used in that life. So, you know, like if you go into a person's office who was, you know, an avid gambler, right? Let's say, for instance, and he's got poker chips on his table and he tells you that he's gotten over it, you can't. Like, poker chips are right there. Why do you have them? It's because you're still holding on to that life, to that part of your life. So he says that's what it means. You have to get rid of that in order to move on. And so that maybe that's a little bit also of what he's trying to say over here about Acher.
It's very Hasidic. Sort of celebration.
Really? Why?
It's like saying, you know, you've got your two identities and, you know, you've got to try and be your real identity, your true identity, not your Yetzirah that's overcome you.
Yeah. I don't know if that's necessarily Hasidic. Really?
To me, it's pretty schmaltzy.
Pretty what?
Schmaltzy.
I mean, he says this. You know,
I like it.
Rabbi Soloveitchik suggests that this is how we understand Sarah Imenu. Sarah says, Avram says, you laughed, and she says,
I didn't.
No, I didn't. How could she say that? What does she mean? God. her left. Who's she going to convince? So Rabbi Soloveitchik says what she meant was, you know, take this for whatever, you know, however you're going to take it. It's as valid as interpretation as any. He says, that was my old me that laughed. I didn't laugh, right? Now this borders on the Bill Clintonese, right? you know, it depends what you mean. It depends what you mean by was. If by was you mean is and still is, but no, but that's what he suggested.
I don't think that economy is Hasidic. I think that economy is very Jewish. The Hasidic part would be not that you've got to split off from your eggs and around and push aside, but that you've got to elevate it and bring your eggs and around up to spiritual
level. Right, which. Right, I mean that's one interpretation of tshuva mi'ahava, right? But he in his halachic command, this is how he actually defines tshuva. Is actually he disagrees with Rav Kook. Rav Kook says that tshuva, we've talked about this. Rav tshuva actually means to return to your true self. It means to really allow what's really inside of you to emerge. It's actually for Rav Kook, tshuva is really easy because tshuva just means to be true to yourself. It's easy. You just have to stop faking, right? Rabbi Soloveitchik says tshuva is very hard because tshuva means that you have to become someone else. You're not born perfect and like you can and you can just stay that way. No, you have to achieve. In order to do tshuva, you need to return to God. And you're not born close to God. You have to get there. That's why it's very hard for Rabbi Soloveitchik. He describes this in Halachic Man. The whole second section of Halachic Man is about tshuva. People don't know that. But it's there.
I didn't get that far.
Yeah. The whole part two is the perfect reading for Yom Kippur. Anyways, we have a couple of minutes left, so we'll finish over here. What did I bring the Ramban? take a look at the Ramban, by the way. Take a look at the Ramban I have over here, the second to last source. This Matatron, he doesn't. This is not the only place he shows up. So he says, "Ubakol Elohim Mitzrayim Eses Shvatim." In Perek Yud Beis, it's in Parshas Bo, when he's going to destroy Mitzrayim. V'lo al yidei hashaliach, right? We know from the Agada. V'lo al yidei hashaliach hashaloach meito yitbarach l'chol ha'masim ha'nasim ba'aretz. Usually, all the other plagues were done through a shaliach. U'ha malach ha'gadol shenikra b'avur ken. Matatron, there he is. The malach ha'gadol, God's right hand man, is Matatron. Kiperish amila moreh haderech. The meaning of matatron is moreh haderech. K'mo shamar b'sifri etzbo shel Kadosh Baruch Hu naaseh matatron Moshe. He became the matatron. He became the shaliach. You know, every time Hashem says, "I'm going to send my shaliach," and "I'm going to send my shaliach in front of you," who that was matatron. V'areil kol eretz Yisrael ubilam deinu. It's a set of midrashim. V'yishma balaki ba bilam shashalach matatron lefanav. That means angel. That means a messenger over there. Vod shama chilotetet lefanecha. I ichbat lecha ani matatron shalcha. The word literally means a messenger. Ve'alta tamash arei ani atid lasot matator lifnei adam arel lifnei koresh shenemar ani lefanecha elech. Okay. He shows in the Aramaic portions of the Tanakh, matatron is used over there. And he says, and then I actually heard at the end, he says that actually the Greek word for a messenger is matatar. I don't know whether that's true or not. I take his word for it. So that's why it's Matatron specifically who's doing this, whatever he's doing. Now, what Matatron was actually doing on the seat at that moment in time, I don't know. Can't say. Go a little bit more, about seven lines up on the side. Tana Rabbanan Maaseh Be'achad Shaya Rochib Al Asus B'Shabbat. Right? This is probably the most famous image of Elisha ben Avuya. He's riding on a horse on Shabbos. And Rabbi Meir was walking after him. Not allowed to ride on a horse on Shabbos. It's Asur Midarabanan. Might even be Asur Daraisa to actually ride on it. Vilmod Torah, Mipiv. He was learning from him. Rabbi Meir is basically walking next to a man driving in a car on Shabbos, and he's teaching him through the window. He's learning from him through the window. Like the Chazarin Mishnayos while he's driving. Amar Rabbi Meir, Chazor la'acharecha. Come on back, shekvar shi'arti be'ikve susi ad kan tchum Shabbos. Stop! This is tchum Shabbos. Go any further, you're going to violate tchum Shabbos. Amalei afatach hazor b'chad. No, you have to go back. Amalei v'lo kvar amarti lecha kvar shamati me'acharei apargot shuvu banim shovim. I told you. Sorry. Step back. Elisha ben Avuya told Rabbi Meir, you have to stop here. Because this is tchum Shabbos. Elisha ben Avuya is saying, you know, you have to stop here. This is it for you. And Rabbi Meir says, you should also come back. So Elisha ben Avuya says, I told you already. Shuvu banim shovim chutz me'achar. Takfei aile lebe midrasha. he attacked him. He made him sorry. What did he do? He made him come to the Beis Medrash. How did he do that? He grabbed him. Yeah, he grabbed him and he made him come back to the Beis Medrash. Amalei leyanuka psukli psulka. It didn't work. The first child that they saw. This is a pretty frequent Talmudic trick. The first child they found, they asked him, "What pasuk did you learn today?" Amar lo ein shalom, amar Hashem la rishayim. There will be no peace for the rishayim. They took him to a different shul, right? They took him over to Lechu. Amar lo yinuka psokle pchusukcha. Amar lo kim tchabsi benatar v'tarbi lecha borit nechtam ein avoncha lefanai. He says, even if you were to wash with nidr and use much soap, your iniquity remains stained before me. You can't do tshuva. Even if you were to wash and take a shower with all the soap in the world, you would still remain dirty. And it goes on. He takes it to another shul. That's where Yorgamar ends, but mine continues. And it goes on, every single, I think 13 boys. It gets worse and worse. And Acher gets upset actually at the end. He says to one of them, he said, "If I would have a knife, I would kill this child." He becomes so upset. The Gemara continues, by the way, afterwards, and says that Acher passed away, and Rabbi Meir tried to. They couldn't. It says Gemara says that the Beis Din Shalmala tried to prosecute him, tried to send him to Gehenna, and they couldn't because he had learned so much Torah that he was protected from that. And Rabbi Meir tried to bring him back, and he couldn't actually. The Gemara says he couldn't, but Rabbi Yochanan actually ended up. Getting Acher into heaven, because when Rav Yochanan died, he went to heaven and he grabbed him from Gehinnom, and he pulled him all the way into all the way to Gan Eden, because they couldn't stop Rav Yochanan. Very fast. And then the Gemara talks about the consequences of Rabbi Meir continuing to learn from Acher even after Acher became Acher, that they didn't want to cite Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir would always cite Acher, like I told you before. That's what it says, and they say the famous statement that he threw away the klipa and he ate from the fruit. He had the ability to kind of ignore the heresy of Acher and only take from him, absorb from him the true pure Torah from Acher. Now, the word klipa. Now it's interesting. Tosus on the side of Tesvav tells a lot of other stories, actually about Acher, because he kind of collates stories from the Yerushalmi, from the Midrashim, from other places in the Gemara. Some of the more important stories tells you actually about how the whole thing started. Because if we're to believe our Gemara, so then the whole thing started because Elisha ben Abuya went to Pardes and he saw Matatron, right? But there are other versions of what happened to Elisha. Even during his life. What's the other version of what happened to Elisha ben Avuya?
He saw the kid climbing up
into the tree on the orders of his father and doing Shulach HaKan, and he fell down and he died immediately, right? And he said, "Leis din v'leis dayan." There's no judge and there's no judgment, right? Now, that is actually not attributed to Elisha ben Avuya in the Gemara. The story is told, but it's not attributed to Acher in the Gemara. The Midrashim attributed that story to Acher. But in that Gemara in Kedushin that cites that story, the very next line has Rabbi Akiva explaining that's based on a faulty interpretation of the pasuk that promises, so to speak, long life for both Kibud Av V'Em and Shiluch HaKan. Because Rabbi Yaakov states over there that refers to long life in the afterworld and not long life in our world. Arichus Yamim is in the next world, whatever it means. It means a very, very pristine next world. And if only people had known that, certain people had known that, if Acher had known that, he wouldn't have gone off the derech. Now, I said before, tradition tells us that Rabbi Yaakov, that's cited in the Gemara, is his grandson. So his grandson taught that teaching, that if his grandfather had only known it, then it would have changed his life. But the Tosis over here tells, maybe we'll end with this, tells the story from the Yerushalmi that tells us about when he was born. Which I can still remember, actually, one of the Rebbeim in YU giving this as a Sichas Musar. It says, "B'Yerushalmi v'farish lama ira lo kach, v'ikatfei mikro shedorish v'haya horig dovri divrei Torah," that tells stories about how he would kill Talmidei Chachamim after he went off the derech. "V'amar kol Talmid dahava chamilei have a katil, v'o dahava al lavi lebeis vada have a tamei talya kamei sofra v'amar man ilu avdin hacha." He went crazy at some point. He joined with the Romans, the Yerushalmi says. He was a Moiser. He became involved with a lot of women. Okay, let me find the story that I was looking for. Yeah, if you look, it says Hava Hamase Avuya Avi. It's just talking about his father. It's like, I don't know, 20 lines down. It says it's a story. It says Avuya Avi. Have a Megdola Yerushalayim. His father was one of the, you know, the great people in Yerushalayim. Ubiyom Shabbat Lemhule Kara Lekol Gedola Yerushalayim. On the day of Elisha ben Avuya's bris, he called all of the great rabbis of Yerushalayim. Behoshivan Bebais Echad. He put them all in one place. Ula Rabbi Lazar, Ula Rabbi Yeshua Bemakom Acher. He put them all in one place, and these two Tanaim he put in another place. Man Da'achlin Veshasin Sharin Metapchinu Meraktin Amri Ad Da'alin Askin Beditu Nasok b'didon. He says, everybody's dancing. He said, I want to go see what they're doing. Yashuv and he's asked b'divrei Torah. And he saw that they were just sitting and learning. Yarda esh min ha-shamayim v'hikifa otan. And a fire came down from the sky and surrounded them. That's how holy their learning was. Amr lo navuya avaguvrin mabatem lisrof besi. What are you trying to burn down my house? Amr lo chas v'shalom aliyoshim hayinu v'chozen divrei Torah. B'torah. The Nevi'im and Nevi'im Laksuvim, Vayadvarim Smechem Kanisinas and Mesinai, Lo Beish Nasnu, Amr. Okay, so they said, no, we're just learning, and it's like Har Sinai, there was fire there, so there's fire here, don't worry, it's not going to burn anything. Amr Oro Vakach Kocha Shal Torah, if this is the power of Torah, Im Yiskayim HaBen Azel LeTorah Ani Mafrisho. If this is the power of Torah, and this boy can become great in Torah, then I'm going to allow him to become like that. Ulfi Shalai Sakavaras Al Shamayim, because his father wanted him to become great. In other words, he said, Al Menas Kane. Like basically, I'm going to have him become a good Jewish boy so that he can be as great as Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. Lefichach lo niskaimu bo. Ubamakam sheyesh bagamara shelanu achar epargod yesh lahem lesham. Okay, so it almost attributes to his father the blame that because at the beginning of his life, he wanted him to become as great as Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua. I can remember Rav Kohn in YU. So he was saying that the meaning behind this, the reason why it attributes to the blame, is that that was the avira in which Elisha ben Avuya grew up. That it was either greatness or bust.
That's why he talks about in that book in Driven Me.
Yeah, he does. He does. That's how it ends, kind of. Yeah, that's how it ends. Like Elisha ben Avuya basically is saying, like, if I can't have everything, then I want nothing. And almost that was the avira that he grew up in, and that's never going to end well. In other words, if it's just greatness or bust, then, you know, there's always going to be somebody greater. There's always going to be more. You're never going to be satisfied, right? And that's perhaps what was one of the seeds of his downfall, this avira that he grew up with. And we don't have to always assume that, like, you know, I'm either the greatest or I'm worth nothing. It can always be, you know, greater than us.
I think the message is that you should always strive to be more.
Of course.
You start to be like someone else.
Right.
That's the problem. You're trying to be like certain
right.
Instead of trying to be the best person that he could be himself.
Right.
That's Hasidic.
Right? Preposition.
That's Hasidic, exactly.
Position. Yeah. All right, we'll stop there. Shkoyach, everyone. A little bit of a different flavor this time.
Very nice.